The Gramco is a presenting sponsor of Reed's Ranch. What is the Gramco? Well, it is your go-to destination for all your Delta 8 needs. Gramco currently offers numerous Delta 8 products and merchandise, including Wake and Bake Delta 8 coffee, Delta 8 disposable vapes, Delta 8 gummies, the fruit punch is my favorite, and Delta 8 quick mix, pre-rolls, and my favorite, hard candies, some big orange hard candies. Go to thegramco.com, browser selection, use the promo code BALLS25 for 25% off your order, and then you get free standard shipping for orders over $50, and that shipping is quick and discreet. Must be 21 or older. Gramco offers you an enjoyable, legal high delivered discreetly and directly to you. TheGramco.com, TheGramco.com. The interest rates are up and the stock market is down, but you can still buy you a new house. You can still sell your own home, and you should do so with my friend Seth Norris with the real estate firm. He's on a mission to be the best slightly above average realtor in East Tennessee. And like most realtors, whether they're willing to admit it or not, he got in this business to get rich. So he spent money that was going to go to his wife's car's tires to get on this podcast, to advertise with us, because I told him, hey, you want to get in with the Ranch Gang. That's what you want to do. You can give him a call at 865-719-1285. That's 865-719-1285. He will tell you the truth. He will take care of you. Because if you're a friend of mine, you're a friend of his. He's a friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. He used to help me on the radio show. Shout out to Four Quarters Radio. You might remember him. One of my interns. Again, give him a call, 865-719-1285. That's Seth Norris with the real estate firm. Week 3 NFL, shooting the shield. John Reed, Corey Gunkel. Corey's over in D.C. How are you, my friend?
Doing well. I can't complain. And if I could, you and nobody else would want to hear it. So,
what an old man saying. I used to hear that at Hardee's all the time growing up.
It's one of my favorites. It usually gets a chuckle. I mean, if you're in corporate America, that's getting a chuckle at least 58% of the time.
25% of the time, people are just like, shut the hell up. I don't want to. No time for jokes, Mr. Funny Man. But either way, no time for jokes here in Tennessee as my Titans got the absolute hell beaten out of them last night by the Buffalo Bills. Ask me if I'm worried.
John, are you worried?
A little bit, but I'm not going to panic. Is that a fair answer?
That's fair.
Their offensive line stinks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good. And it's not good at all. And you kind of need one of those.
And that's not good when you're trying to base your team on having a good offensive line and being able to run and do those things. You kind of need the line to be good, and our line stinks right now. And our defense has been the most, maybe the saddest part about it, because the defense stunk last night too.
Yeah, it's been a really tough couple of weeks, and I mean, you don't want to panic full blown yet because of the division you're in. Obviously, it would be different if you're in like the AFC West or something. So you don't want to panic, but with the way that the Titans playing on both sides of the ball right now, I mean, I would be a little worried. I'm not going to lie. I'm not even being a troll here. I would be a little worried because things don't look great.
They do not, but it's the NFL. It's week 2. The Buffalo Bills are a tank. It doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, or, you know, if you lose by 11 or a mile, if you're someone who bets on the spread. As long as you don't cover, you might as well get your ass absolutely beaten. Now we can question their manhood all week, and maybe they'll bounce back against the Raiders, another team that's been pretty disappointing. The other Monday Night Football game last night saw the Eagles make a pretty, pretty big statement as they dominated the Vikings.
Whew, they're good. They're so good. I mean, Darius Slay locked down Justin Jefferson. I mean, he absolutely put the clamps on him. That was super impressive. We've talked about it on this podcast before. A.J. Brown, still really good. Jalen Hurts, better than a lot of people have given him credit for. And I mean, I have always respected Jalen Hurts because he absolutely terrorizes the Saints. But man, he looked awesome. The Eagles are for real. And I think that put everybody on notice. And also the Vikings are the Vikings.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, still primetime Kirk Cousins. It sucks for him because all the metrics will tell you he's pretty good and that he's a, you know, pretty firmly a top 10 quarterback. He dominates on Sundays, and then you throw him on primetime, and he looks awful. And last night was on primetime, and boy, did he look awful. But, yeah, A.J. Brown's still really good. I think maybe the biggest takeaway from me for week two is just like, oh, yeah, if you have a pretty promising rookie wide receiver, and then, you know, you're not quite sure if he's ready to be a number one, if you get him a really, really good sidekick, chances are your offense is going to go to another level. You saw that in Philadelphia when you have A.J. Brown coming in. Then all of a sudden, Devonta Smith looks really good. That's how he's supposed to look. Same thing in Miami whenever you have Jalen Waddle. Then all of a sudden, you put Tyreek Hill next to him. Now, all of a sudden, all four of those receivers look really, really good. And they, you know, they're complementing each other, and the offenses are scoring a bunch of points. I know the Eagles didn't score a bunch of points last night. They didn't need to. They didn't need to. They ended that game in the first quarter.
Yeah, it was over. I mean, it was pretty well and good over there after the first quarter. And you're right, they didn't have to do much scoring, kind of like what the Vikings did to the Packers the week before, where they didn't rack up a bunch of points, but they looked really impressive despite that because they didn't really have to. And then, you know, the Vikings got served that same recipe the next week. And now I'm questioning everything I ever said about the Vikings last week because I had Kevin O'Connell making the Vikings the Rams of the North, and they looked worse than the Saints offense did. Somehow.
Well, the thing about it is you can't panic because the Rams of the North, the actual Rams last year, lost three games in a row and looked lost in the middle of the last year, and then they ended up winning the Super Bowl. The Chiefs got their ass absolutely beaten in Nashville and then turn around and, you know, was pretty, you know, a half away from being in the Super Bowl. This is just what the NFL is. Although I will say two of my stronger takes from the offseason was I really, really like Miami and I really like Philadelphia. And so far, both those teams making me look pretty smart.
Miami, Tua, the number one passing leader in the NFL after 2 weeks, baby. And we're not going to talk about how the Ravens were missing like four of their starting defensive backs. We're not going to talk about that. We're only going to, we're a pro Tua podcast. We are firmly into Anon. And, you know, you got to give them credit. That was a great comeback. And they never win in Baltimore. They never win in Baltimore. And when you're down, what was it, like 28-7 or whatever it was, you're flipping that game off most of the time if you're a Dolphins fan. I'm sure a lot of them did. And for the fact that they came back in that kind of fashion with Tua just throwing the ball all over the Ravens was impressive. And it's what happens when you've revamped the offense and you add a guy like Tyreek Hill and you bring in a coach that knows what he's doing offensively. I mean, they were obviously the talk of the NFL after last week, and deservedly so, because they looked super impressive. And that's a win that doesn't happen in most all of the Dolphins' recent history. And they were able to pull it out, and that was extremely impressive.
I know you said Baltimore was missing some of their defensive backs, but ain't none of them fast enough to catch up to those boys anyways.
I mean, goodness gracious. The Dolphins, they're for real. It's a playoff team. Now, they're not going to win the division, obviously, but that's a playoff team.
I'm not saying they're not winning the division. I thought that their odds at, you know, 4.5 to 1 were pretty good. I think this offense can keep up with Buffalo. We'll see if the defense can. Because that's – I don't want to be a hater, but, like, Josh Allen's left a couple plays on the field. I know they've looked really good, but he's going to throw you a couple passes. He's going to throw you a couple passes, and it's just whether or not you intercept them. So – I think the Dolphins and Bills play this weekend. I'm so looking forward to that game. I think it is a, you know, great game on paper. I really want to see what Mike McDaniel does because I was kind of, I was really impressed with what he did in that game against Baltimore where he's, you know, running two tight end sets but having their tight end spread out wide and then having Waddle and Hill in the slot on, you know, on linebackers. And for some reason, Baltimore is like, yeah, let's try to cover these guys with Patrick Queen. Let's see how that works. And oh yeah, you know, our safety Hamilton, the rookie, he'll be able to make the right reads here, passing guys off. And meanwhile, they're just like four verts every time, or at least two verts every time. We're sending those guys deep. or at the very least, we're going to use Tyreek to clear out the middle, and then Jalen Waddle is going to come in behind him. And he looks, Mike McDaniel looks like he knows what he's doing. He undressed two of what we would consider the two of the four best coaches, five best coaches of the last decade of NFL football, in Bill Belichick and John Harbaugh. He whipped both their asses. That's a pretty good debut for your NFL career.
Yeah, you can't really ask for much more than that. And that game is going to be awesome. And to your point about the Bills, I just have to say I found this stat and I thought it was ridiculous. Since the start of last season, the Bills have three games with 40 points and four forced turnovers. And that is as many as the rest of the NFL combined. So I kind of take the other tact in that I think it's more impressive that you Josh Allen, like you said, will give you a play or two. And they weren't perfect against the Rams. They had a couple turnovers. They didn't play their best ball, and they still won by double digits on the road. To me, that's more impressive and not less. So I think that's obviously your game of the week, and I'm really excited to see what the Dolphins do defensively because, you know, you've got a really talented DB. You've got Xavier Howard. You've got the defensive pieces to make it work. And now you have an offensive-minded coach who can make it work on the offensive side. That's obviously your game of the week and one that I'm sure we're all going to be tuning into.
Yeah, I've been more impressed with Buffalo's defense so far. You know, they seem to be a really, really good unit. And I know they were last year on paper, but, you know, through two games, they've looked awesome. So them versus Miami, that's maybe, you know, the game of the week. Anything else stand out from week two? I still think I'm not buying the Bucs offense.
No.
The Saints maybe just stink.
I don't think that's the case. I think the Saints defense is awesome. I just think their offense stinks.
I mean, either way, the Saints stink, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if you play that if that's your worst offensive game and you're tied with 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, I'll take it. Especially since I think Brady had one touchdown in that game and it was after your number one defensive player was off the field and your two starting corners are gone.
Well, the offense didn't look much better in week one against the Falcons for three quarters.
That is the problem, is that they've played eight quarters and the offense has looked horrendous for seven of those quarters. And Jameis is literally climbing a broke back mountain, if we can, because he was just abysmal. So, and I agree with you on the Bucs offense. Not only are they banged up, but Brady wasn't impressive. You know, he had that one good throw.
The Bucs, I'm not being fooled with. They play the Packers this week in Tampa. My favorite bet. I'll take the Packers. I think the
totally
Bucs.
Totally agree.
I will say another takeaway I had from week two is just that, hey, like maybe if you're not a good coach the first go around, you're probably not going to be a good coach the second go around either, because as I'm watching the Saints, Dennis Allen stand there and not know what the hell he's doing and how to manage a game and how to keep his players composed. Then I turn on the afternoon and see Josh McDaniel, who sucked in Denver, do the same thing, blow a big lead against the Cardinals. And I was like, yeah, you know, sometimes if you prove you're not very good, you don't need a second chance. Same for, you know, maybe Lovie Smith, because the Texans probably should be 2-0 right now, and instead they're 0-1-1.
They should. And let's not let Cliff Kingsbury off the hook. He wasn't a very good college coach. And they're getting a delay of game on the last play of the game. I mean, he was saved by Kyler Murray. I mean, that was horrendous. That to me was one of the worst of the day.
Very good point. Very good point by you there. I didn't take his college career into account, but yes, he somehow parlayed a pretty bad job as a head coach into being the OC at USC and then just actually getting hired by the Cardinals for some reason. And it's not surprising that he has not been very good there. Kyler, for all the shit he took this offseason, Kyler kind of bailed them out with the schoolyard ball in the fourth quarter, just running around making plays.
It was fun to watch because for all of the schemes, you know, we always talk about in general how you just don't know a lot. You know, you just when you're watching football, you know what a touchdown is, but you don't really know what they're doing. You don't know what kind of schemes they're drawing up. You couldn't read a play sheet from one of these guys. But that was one example of a guy just being more athletic than another guy and winning the game. And it was really fun to watch.
Anything else?
Nope. I have one thing to say, though. I thought this was insane. I think we've probably seen it. play out without knowing, but these 12 games, there were 12 games in the past 2 weeks decided by 3 points or fewer this season. That is the most games that have been decided by 3 points or fewer in the first 2 weeks of a season in league history. So we have been seeing some really fun Shield, and I hope it only gets better, but it's been a fantastic first 2 weeks.
Well, when one of those games is Patriots Steelers, I'll say hold off on saying really fun, but yeah, no, it's been close. The Jets served some comeuppance to the Browns. Their fans were asking for it with those mannequins with erections outside of their tailgates, mocking what Deshaun Watson did. They deserved to have their hearts ripped out.
They absolutely deserve that. And their head coach had his kids on the field on the fourth quarter.
The head coach or the owner? The head coach or the owner? I thought it was the owner.
Okay, it might have been the owner, but I thought it was the head coach. But yeah, there were kids on the field of somebody very high up in the Browns organization as if they forgot that they were the Cleveland Browns, even though they were playing the Jets. I thought that was hysterical too. But then they cut back to them and the kids are in the stands at the end. I mean, that's brutal, but if any fan base deserves it right now, it's definitely the Cleveland Browns.
The Lions continue to have a really, really good offense. I think that was my favorite bet of the week. When we recorded last week, and they took care of business. Their offense is kind of a juggernaut right now, low-key. And I'll also give a shout-out. I think they deserve a shout-out, the Dallas Cowboys. Cooper Rush, better than Dak Prescott. Who knew?
Man, impressive. They're going to be – there. It's Coop season. Dak is out, and it's Coop season. That was an impressive win.
Did you get to enjoy all this? Because I was just kind of watching the red zone, but I know that you're a DirecTV Sunday Ticket guy. Did you get to enjoy all these games?
Oh, yeah, John. Let me tell you. I would have loved to have watched a lot of football on Sunday, but I wasn't able to watch probably an hour, if not a little bit more, of Sunday Ticket because the damn thing just went out. This is the second week in a row where I'm sitting there. You know, a lot of people pay a lot of money. I don't. I pay the student discount. Don't ask me how I get that, but don't worry about it. But a lot of people pay a lot of money to watch Sunday Ticket. They live out of market. You know, I'm not watching the Commanders. Like, I want to watch Red Zone and I want to watch my team and I want to flip games. I wasn't able to because DirecTV is the worst company on earth. Their CEO should be executed live streaming on Sunday Ticket. And the only reason they wouldn't do it is because as they were streaming it, it would go out and cut back 4 hours later to his dead body. So I did not get to see it, John, because of Sunday Ticket, because DirecTV is the worst company on earth. IBM, John, IBM helped the Nazis during World War II, and DirecTV is worse than them. They are the worst company that has ever been founded, and their CEO, again, I want to make this very clear, deserves to be executed.
Seems like they're really mailing it in because they know they're losing that contract. They know like Apple TV or Disney is about to buy it, so they're like, screw it. Who cares? We're not keeping it anyway.
They don't care. And the worst part is when you get the cutesy marketing email at the end of the day. You haven't been able to watch Red Zone. You're tapping your wrist because you need the fix so bad. You're taking your belt off to wrap it around your wrist. And you get the email that says, sorry, we fumbled this week. And it makes you want to, it really makes you want to throw your phone. Yeah.
You know, whoever wrote that felt like they nailed it too.
Oh my God, they were
get it?
So happy.
Fumble. It's like football, yeah. The football thing.
Yeah, so no, I didn't get to watch all of it, but I did get to watch some. So that is my stance.
Well, let's look ahead to week three. Because week two, you know, I don't think anyone buried themselves. You know, I think week three is kind of like you can come back from 0-2, but 0-3 is really, really going to make it difficult. There's a couple of games that definitely feels like whoever loses is going to be desperate and maybe out of it. We said that was the case about the Cardinals and Raiders game. The Raiders found a way to choke in excruciating fashion, and now they have to play a Titans team that's equally as desperate. Although, let me take that back. They're not equally as desperate because the Titans, even if they go 0-3, will look and say, we get Washington and the Colts twice and the Texans once in the next four games, so all of those look winnable right now. The AFC South we know sucks, but the AFC West, at least at the top with the Chiefs and Chargers, looks to be really good. Denver looks like they suck. The Raiders look like they suck. I'm not even so sure the Chargers and Chiefs are good either. So, like, I'm thinking that might be the most overrated division so far.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Chargers. The Chargers at home against the Jags, they're a 7-point favorite. I kind of like Jacksonville there. I think Jacksonville is really good. Not, I think they're better. I was about to say something that you were going to pounce on me for. So I will revise by saying I think the Jags are better than a lot of, especially the casuals, think. And I mean, that's a game where the Chargers could very easily lose that game, especially with Herbert being hurt. And I know you have a potential conspiracy theory about that, but the Jags, man, you win that game and you're looking good. Yeah, so I agree with you. It's not, especially with Brandon Staley being your head coach, and we know he's not very good. So that's a game to watch.
Yeah, my eyes will be fixed on it. The Jaguars do have my attention. They do seem like they are going to be the Titans' biggest competition in that division. I didn't really buy the Doug Peterson, Trevor Lawrence, you know, pairing in terms of that's who I'd want to pair Trevor Lawrence with, just because I thought it was so bad at the end of Doug Peterson's career there in Philadelphia. And, you know, we saw what he did with Carson Wentz for so long. Now, he did make Nick Foles look good, credit where it's due. But so far through two games, especially on Sunday, man, like Trevor Lawrence looks sharp and they're getting the ball out quick. He's throwing, you know, I think over 50% of his passes on Sunday were on dropbacks that took less than 2.5 seconds. And on those passes, I believe it was 18 of 19. And the Jags have some pretty shifty players that are catching those passes with Christian Kirk and Etienne and even Zay Jones. Like, a couple of those guys are pretty shifty. So the Jags are going really quick and really slender and trying to move fast, and it's been working so far. Now, can they make it last for 18 weeks? You know, because I still think they're a little bit away from that when you look at their depth and how young their players are. But week three, them traveling to the Chargers, especially if Herbert's banged up, like you said, which he is, that's a potential statement game for Trevor and the boys.
It absolutely is, and it's not a shoot in the shield unless we bring up the vaunted DVOA. Right now, Jacksonville is the number two DVOA team in the NFL. The only team higher than them is Buffalo. So just something to watch.
Ready to go that far with my Jacksonville praise, because they did lose to Carson Wentz and let him throw for 4 touchdowns. But Jacksonville probably should have won that game. And then they dismantle a Colts team that, you know, it looks like you're beating a dead horse if you're a Colts fan right now.
Yeah, a dead Colt, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. So when you think of dead, beating a dead horse, you probably think like they're dead and you're beating them, right? But really, it's just like coming from horse racing, and like you're whipping the horse, trying to get him to go faster, and he's just got nothing left. Or either like he's out working in the field and you're trying to beat him to get him to pull the plow faster and he ain't got nothing left. That's what Matt Ryan and the Colts look like to me. The dead horse. You're beating them. You're like, please get better. But they don't have nothing left.
Who do you think they're going to go with next year? You think they're going to call maybe
Jimmy G?
Brees out of retirement?
Jimmy G.
Not a bad idea.
They'll go with Jimmy G. Maybe Jameis, actually. They might give Jameis a crack.
That'd be kind of funny. I actually would like that.
I could see Mariota. Hell, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility they call Ryan Tannehill at this rate. So who knows? We'll see which way the Colts blow whenever they try to find them a new quarterback next year to get them over the hump.
It'll be interesting.
But yeah, like I said, Raiders-Titans, that feels like a gigantic game. Are you surprised that the Raiders are 2.5-point favorites?
Yeah, I was looking at that. It's a home game, too, for the Titans. So I'm actually very surprised. You would think that'd be a pick-em at worst.
It was a pick-em until last night, and then they saw how the Titans looked, and it became 2.5. I will say I would expect a whole lot of Raiders fans to be inside the building.
Yeah, yeah. Why? Definitely get on the buddy system there in Nashville, if you're around. If you've seen somebody wearing black and silver, have your whistle handy and be prepared.
I made my decision before the game, but I'm not going on Sunday. It wasn't because we got our ass kicked by the Bills. It was just because I'll be in Knoxville with Vols, Gators, and it's going to be a whole day thing. And I was like, I know I'm not going to want to drag myself up on Sunday morning and drive to Nashville. So,
yeah, I think that's a win-win because obviously Tennessee, the university, is the focus of everybody in that state this week. You win and you're not going to get the deflation of having to go to Nissan Stadium and lose. Or if you lose to Florida, then you don't have to pick yourself up and go to a potential other loss. So I think that's probably a smart idea. Just keep it Vols this weekend and just watch the game.
What are the chances that the Jets beat the Bengals in New York this week? The Jets coming off of a pretty miraculous win where they scored, 14 points over the final 2 minutes. They get an onside kick. Joe Flacco turns it back to 2012. Corey Davis running wild. What are the chances they beat a Bengals team that is really, really struggling right now? And you see some frustration coming out of Joe Burrow. Zach Taylor has not adjusted. He is pretty much running back the same exact offense he ran last year. And now defenses have had a year to get ready for it. They're basically just daring Joe Burrow with the cover too deep, and their offensive line can't block well enough to, continue doing what they've been doing. It's been a disaster so far for Cincinnati.
It's been a disaster, and they're desperate. And I mean, it's not impossible. I mean, I think FPI gives them about a 22% chance. So, I mean, that seems right to me. I think the Bengals win that game. I think they're going to be desperate. I mean, the Jets give up like 27 points a game. So, I mean, I think the Bengals are definitely going to score despite their offensive line woes. But it's not impossible. And man, if the Bengals start 0-3 and the Jets start 2-1, we're in for an insane season because, you would think that they would be able to figure it out against the Jets, even though it's on the road and they looked really bad, but it's not impossible. 1-4 shot. I mean, that's not bad.
I think that's a good game to watch. I think the Jets, their crowd's going to be pretty excited, and I also think that the Bengals might be one of those Super Bowl hangover teams that are just a disaster this year. I know we talked about the Rams like that last week, but the Bengals might be that team because they can't block. And I will say shout out to the Jets because Garrett Wilson looks like a monster.
He is an absolute beast.
Your boy Chris Olave sucks, but Garrett Wilson is a monster.
No, I think Olave's good too, but
no,
I think
stinks.
Garrett Wilson.
No,
no, maybe, you're maybe just mad because you bet on the Saints. Let's just call it what it is. You bet on the Saints, they lost.
It's not Olave's fault that they went 0-3 trying to connect on deep passes.
Yeah.
And then when they finally do connect on a deep pass, he falls down and fumbles.
Yeah, that, though, I mean,
like a loser. It should have been a touchdown. The one damn throw Jameis made all day, he throws a bullet. And 50 yards down the field, and Olave catches it and falls down. He should have scored a touchdown. Instead, he fumbles.
It is, but bad fumble. But I will say it is funny that we talked all last week and this week about not overreacting. And after 2 weeks, we're calling a guy that had 80 yards on 5 catches a touchdown.
Okay, hold on. The 80 yards have an asterisk. The 80 yards have an asterisk if on the 50 yard catch you fumble untouched. So hold on a second.
So I agree, fumble is bad, but I don't think I'm willing to call him a bust just yet after 2 weeks of playing.
What if I tell you that besides the 51-yard pass, he had 12 targets for 29 yards? What do you say about that?
I mean, are we blaming Jameis or him? I thought it was Jameis.
I think they both stink. I think one hand washes the other and both hands wash the face. That's what I think.
That's interesting.
What would you say about a wide receiver that had 12 targets for 29 yards? What would you say?
I would say that their quarterback is bad.
Oh, okay. I was just checking. I just wanted to know what you thought.
Yeah, I would say their quarterback is bad. And I'd probably say he probably has a broken back.
What a choke job by the Saints in that game. They were driving.
Driving to win.
7. There were 3 minutes left in the third quarter.
And they definitely win that game if Ingram doesn't fumble. That's the worst part, is they were 100%. Driving to be in control. And that's why I'm not worried. That's why I'm not like super worried, because it's like, they played a horrendous game and it's 3-3 with 8 minutes to go against the GOAT in all these, the Bucs defense, which is really
good. I'll also say that Tampa Bay played a horrendous game. I'll also say that. And also that everyone knew that Tom Brady was going to pull that game out. I also had no clue that Mark Ingram was still in the league.
Yeah.
I had zero clue he was still there.
He's still turning out, man. He was looking good until that fumble, too. That's the second week in a row he's fumbled. So definitely some problems.
10-for-6, he's pretty good, but that fumble was not good, my friend.
Dwayne Washington was even looking good. Yeah, that was bad. That and the 12 men on the field, and then you'd lose the game. I mean, that's embarrassing. But again, we're talking about the Saints right now. Saints play the Panthers. If the Saints win that game, does Matt Rhule get fired? They start 0-3, and that'd be a division loss. And do you stick with him?
They've lost to Jacoby Brissett and Daniel Jones. If they turn around and add Jameis Winston with four broken bones in his back, I think you go ahead and put him out of his misery. Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
I mean, I feel like you kind of have to, because after that, you ready for their next four games after the Saints? So say, I mean, and they could win that game. So it's we're not saying that this is a guarantee here, but say you lose that game, then it's Cardinals, Niners, Rams, Bucks.
Yeah. But I say that this is a very important game for Matt Rhule. Because if they win this game, then all of a sudden you look at that Cardinals game at home as pretty winnable.
Right. Yeah. You win this game, you're feeling okay, and then you get the Cardinals and you're feeling okay. But man,
I believe the stat for Matt Rhule is he has 1-25 when his defense gives up over 17 points. Do you know how hard it is to keep an offense under 17 points in the NFL?
Very. Very. So, yep, that's another one. That could be, you could get your first coach firing in week 3 or week 4 if this thing falls off the rails like it's supposed to. Everybody was thinking it would be Mike McCarthy who goes down in flames early, but it could be Matt Rhule after this Sunday if they lose to the Saints to start 0-3, staring down the barrel of that.
I told you to keep an eye on Frank Wright, and if they get beat by Kansas City like they should get beat by Kansas City, and then turn around and lose a home game to the Titans to go 0-3-1. I think you might see a switch there. But also, don't give up on Nathaniel Hackett getting fired like four games into his tenure, because boy, does he look like he's in over his head.
Is it fair to say that, like, he might be the worst coach in the NFL after two games?
I would think it would be unfair to say anything else. He is awful. He ran the clock out to kick a 64-yard field goal, and then he ran the next game he followed up with a 3rd-and-1 tight end option play, and then it's 4th-and-1, and instead of kicking a 52-yard field goal or going for it, he takes a delay of game and then punts.
The fans are literally counting down the play clock for them after two games.
Yeah, that's bad.
Whew,
he might get fired halfway into his first season.
Yeah, and it would be deserved. Like, it would not even be an overreaction. Like, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, come on. Like, it's a year. Like, look, they weren't great. No, if they fired him tonight after being 1-1, I think everyone in America would just be like, yeah, that makes sense.
100%. My game I'm looking forward to the most next week, I think there's some good ones. You know, the Titans, we've talked about them. Big game there. Bills-Dolphins is going to be awesome. The Bills ballooning up to a 5.5-point favorite. The over-under has already gone from 51 to 54, so they're expecting another shootout. Lions-Vikings is all of a sudden pretty intriguing. I like this Lions team. I think they're frisky, but also want to see how that, you know, Justin Jefferson and Kirk Cousins offense bounces back. We talked about the Bucks-Packers. That's going to be a good one. My game I'm looking forward to the most, I guess, is one of those, probably Bills-Dolphins, just because I want to see if this Tua thing is real. Because let's keep some perspective. They had 14 points through three quarters. Are they more of that offense, or are they more of the ones that says, like, oh my God, unleash Waddle and Hill and let's go? We'll find out against Buffalo.
I think so too. And I think another decent game is going to be Rams-Cardinals. That's a big one.
That's right now, I feel like that's a mid-off. I think both those teams are pretty average at best. But the standings, it matters for the division, of course, but I don't think either one of those teams are going to be a factor this year. You got a best bet or anything on the way out?
I love what you said about the Packers. I mean, the Bucks right now are 1.5-point favorites. I'm going Packers. I mean, I feel like that's a pretty safe bet with how banged up the Bucks are and how bad they looked on Sunday. I mean, their defense is great, but I mean, man, I just don't trust them. So I think the Packers plus 1.5 is great. And I also like the Jags plus 7. I mean, I'm not ready to be jagging off just yet, but I do think they're better than a lot of people think, and I think they can at least cover.
Yeah, you're such a jag off. I will say that my favorite bet, give me the Ravens plus 3 or -3.5 going to New England. I'm not fooled by them beating the Steelers. I think the Patriots are still going to stink. They just aren't going to stink as bad as the Steelers do. I think the Ravens, easy cover in New England. 3.5-point spread. Lamar's going to keep balling out. They win by at least a touchdown.
I like it. I like that a lot.
Also, like, I think I might just keep riding the overs in, like, Washington games and, you know, just riding that. They play the Eagles this week. Of course, the Eagles have a pretty good offense. And also, keep riding overs in the Lions games. It's 53.5.
I was going to say, Vikings. That has to be, like, what is that over right now? Is it, like, 95 for Lions-Vikings? Good God.
Well, the Vikings did look pretty terrible last night, but I do think they'll bounce back. I could see a game in the 30s there. So those are things to keep an eye on. All right, Corey, any final thoughts?
No final thoughts, John. I can't wait to watch at least 1.5 hours of football next Saturday before my DirecTV crashes out and I do something I regret.
The Shield comes on Sundays, not Saturdays, but I know what you mean. Talk to you later, brother. Love you.
See you, buddy. Love you.